RV Family Travel Atlas is sponsored by Jayco. Since 1968, Jayco has been providing a way for generations of families to create lasting memories. For more information, visit your local Jayco dealer or head on over to jayco.com.
And by the Thetford Corporation, the industry expert and innovation leader, Thetford has made RV travel a more pleasant experience for over 50 years. To see a complete lineup of products, visit thetford.com.
And by Cabela's. Cabela's has everything you need to get your family into the great outdoors. Visit Cabela's.com and make sure your next great camping trip is one for the record books.
And by Go RVing, providing stories, stunning photography, and inspiration from real RVers over on the Scenic Route blog. To find your way, visit GoRVing.com.
And by Campgrounds of America. To find out what's behind the yellow sign, visit KOA.com or download the free KOA app today.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of RV Family Travel Atlas. I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Jeremy.
And we write about RV and family travel with our three boys, Theo, Max, and Wes.
You can read about our adventures at RVFamilyTravelAtlas.com, and you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram.
On this week's episode of RV Family Travel Atlas, we are taking you to summer school and diving into the yummy world of smoking and grilling. This is truly one of America's greatest pastimes, and the way many of us feed our families in the summer, both on the road and at home.
So we invited Campground of the Week correspondent Casita Dean onto the show to coach us through the process of smoking and grilling in the backyard and at the campground. He'll tell us the basic gear we need, the most important steps in the process, and then, most important of all, his favorite recipes.
You might throw a couple of hamburgers on the propane grill and call it a barbecue, but we know that to truly satisfy that summer palate, you need to go low and slow. You are listening to episode number 148, Smoking and Grilling 101 with Casita Dean.
Before we head into this week's feature topic, Smokin' and Grillin' 101 with Casita Dean, it's time for our RV News Minute, which is sponsored by our friends at Go RVing.
If you love great RVing content as much as we do, then you have to check out The Scenic Route, which is Go RVing's lifestyle blog.
There you can read stories, see stunning photography, and discover inspiration from real RVers who have found their way.
Like our friend Soulful RV Family, after 11 years in the NFL, Keith Sims and his wife Tia decided it was time for a change of pace. So now they spend 100 days and nights each year traveling and using the experiences to enhance their three boys' homeschool education.
Or James and Stephanie, better known as the Fit RV. They took their love for adventure and healthy living on the road and share their tips and tricks for being active and staying fit as RVers.
You can follow their adventures and more, like ours, over at GoRVing.com. Find your way, go RVing. And we've had all those folks on this show.
That's right.
Sharing their
because
expertise.
All the stars in the RV world come on the show eventually.
Yep.
And a new star has really been born in the RV world, and that's what this week's RV News Minute is all about. So many Americans know who Joe Maddon is. He's the World Series winning manager of the Chicago Cubs. And he's also, I think, just one of the most interesting, quirky figures in all of professional sports. He's kind of considered to be this like freak genius of a manager. And of course, he helped the Cubs win the World Series, right? And break that curse. Now, Joe Maddon's a player in the RV industry, right? So let's go back. 2015, when Joe Maddon left the Tampa Bay Rays, he had about 10 different major league teams courting him to be their manager. And Theo Epstein called him up and said, hey, we want to talk to you about managing the Chicago Cubs. But Joe Maddon and his wife, Jay, were on an RV vacation in their RV, which they called the Cousin Eddie. And he said, well, you need to fly in here and meet me. So Theo,
that's power.
That is power.
You come to my RV.
Yeah.
I don't come to your office. You come
so
to my
Theo
RV.
Maddon, Theo Epstein and the general manager of the Cubs flew in. They met him at a campground and they hung out and had a meeting in his RV. They drank beer, had chips and salsa, and basically agreed for Madden to become the manager of the Chicago Cubs. So Madden has this quirky history in the RV industry. He's a very passionate RVer. He spends his entire winter traveling in an RV. And just recently, he signed a deal with Winnebago Industries to become a spokesperson for them. So I was like very excited about this. And they have this whole, you know, sub-website called meetthemaddens.com. So Winnebago has signed him to a multi-year contract, and they gave him, I assume, a 2017.
I hope so. If you're Joe Madden, you better get your RV for free. So it better be part of the deal.
According to the press release, quote, he took delivery of a new 2017
it's called the euphemism,
Winnebago Grand Tour. And there's some cute videos on YouTube and on Winnebago's website of the Maddens, like, taking their first tour of the RV and seeing it. And of course, he's busy during baseball season now, but they did some content with Joe Madden in spring training, and I'm sure once the season's over, he will be really working as a Winnebago spokesperson and doing little quirky videos and creating content for the RV industry.
Can we talk about the one that got away then? Because this is truly the one that got away. Because when we were visiting, you don't even remember that this happened, when we were visiting and working with the CVB, the Visitors Bureau down in Myrtle Beach years ago now.
3 or 4 years ago.
The PR person that we were talking to said, hey, and while you're here, because we were going to go, we actually went to the opening game.
The Myrtle Beach minor league team is a Chicago Cubs affiliate.
Right.
So this press person from Myrtle Beach said, hey, would you guys want to interview Joe Madden on your podcast? And I was like, yes.
I was like, who's Joe Madden?
I was like, oh my God, that would be literally the greatest score ever. But it didn't happen. I mean, he's a busy guy. Didn't happen.
And I have to be honest, we didn't like change our schedule to make it happen. Like, I don't think we really did enough.
She tried.
Oh, did she?
She tried to get him, and his people, I remember her saying, his people said he was too busy. And guess what? Well, I mean, we're not Oprah. I mean, I hate to say it. They were like, do you want to go on the RV Family Travel Atlas podcast? And I'm sure he was like, oh, I love them.
I listen every week, but you know.
So maybe, I don't know. It's a dream. Maybe at some point we'll get him on the show and talk RVing. Joe, if you're out there listening, give me a call.
All right.
You don't have to call my people. Call me direct.
All right. So that's
this week's RV News Minute.
We are going to be back, and we are going to be experiencing just about an hour of absolute bliss while Dean Cassidadine tells us how to up our smoking and grilling game. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. We are always excited when we get Cassidadine May on the show, and he is here to give us 3 great segments in this big Smoking and Grilling 101 episode. First, he's going to talk basic gear. Then he's going to talk about the basic process. And then he's going to do some favorite recipes in a third segment. But before we start talking to Dean, we have a sponsored message from our friends at Cabela's.
Cabela's has everything you need to get your family into the great outdoors. And they also have everything you need to start your smoking and grilling journey today. From electric and propane smokers to the newest addition on our own family deck, the Cabela's Pellet Grill, which is hugely awesome so far, by the way, or the newest addition to our campsite, which is the Cabela's Ultimate Cook Station XL. They can get you outfitted for your next great cooking adventure. So you can get wood chips, dry rubs, marinades, everything you need for some good old smoking and grilling at the Cabela's store. Cabela's, it's in your nature.
It's in Dean's nature. Welcome to the show, Dean.
It is wonderful to be back on RVFTA.
Oh, we're so happy you're here. And, you know, you always tempt us with your pictures of your latest creation on the smoker and on the grill in our RVFTA Facebook group.
I lick my phone when you put those pictures on.
So we knew that you were the one to have on the show to do this episode. Thank you for putting it all together for us.
Oh, it was a lot of fun to do it.
All right. Now, why don't you give our listeners just a little bit about your history, like when you started to become interested in doing smoking and grilling for yourself and just sort of like how you came about to your system today?
Okay. All right. Well, but, you know, before we get started, I did want to mention that I just recently listened to, you know, the episode on Hiking 101, and Andrew Skurka is a beast. So I don't know that I'm the equivalent of the smoking, grilling beast that Andrew Skurka is to hiking. That he is really, really impressive.
Dean, he was so hard to get on the show because we would email him and he'd be like, no, I'm doing a 30-mile run tomorrow. You know, like day after day after day. And then we had to even cancel a few times because he like got back late from his like the section of the Appalachian Trail he was doing that day, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, right. Dean, you'd have to like do a smoking marathon or something if you want to really up your game. But at the same time, I think it's great because you're not going to scare our listeners, right? You're going to keep it real. You're going to keep it basic.
If and when we do a rally again, Dean's going to come and we're going to make him grill the entire time.
Yeah.
Like 48 hours straight.
It'll be a
grilling.
Marathon.
We'll bring you water. We'll bring you over whatever you need. We'll keep the Thetford porta potty nearby.
And then we'll call him Casita Dean the beast. And he'll be a beast.
There we go.
Too. All right.
Well, that sounds good. But hey, but in terms of talking about smoking and grilling, I think there's something that's a lot of fun. It's a little YouTube video song. And I think you guys can maybe post the link in the show notes, but if you just look up the barbecue song, it's by a couple of comedians, Rhett and Link, and it really gives you a wonderful overview of Southern style barbecue, sort of broken down state by state.
Is it like so, really catchy and memorable?
Yes, you got it. I mean, it's 3 minutes and it's well worth your time, and you will get a nice synopsis of how meat and barbecue and smoking and grilling is approached in the South.
Now, are you prepared to sing a few lines?
No, I am not.
So. He sounds firm. All right. I'll put it in the show notes.
So that would be good. But really, I started grilling as a teenager. I remember a senior in high school. I grew up on a small 10-acre farm in southern Indiana. And then, you know, we'd get to the point we'd maybe be celebrating whatever the senior during my senior year. And my dad just bought a little small charcoal grill. I have been grilling ever since then. Laura and I got married in 1983. One of the first things I got was a very, very small grill, and I have owned a charcoal grill and or a gas grill for all of my adult life ever since I've been married. And I added a smoker to the arsenal probably about 8 or 10 years ago. When it comes to smoking, I tried smoking food some in the 1990s. I had kind of an inexpensive, cheap smoker. I wasn't real impressed with the results and just ended up going back to the charcoal grill or the gas grill. And then finally, about 6 or 8 years ago, maybe a little longer than that, I got, you know, again, college professor, I'm going to get preoccupied with something, a little obsessive compulsive, and no matter what it is, I'm really going to get into it. So I was looking at smokers, and I narrowed it down, and I know you guys are going to find this hard to believe, given we have an egg camper, I identified an egg-style smoker, and they're called Kamado smokers, which if you can imagine an egg sort of inverted upside down with the broad side up, that's the dome that you would lift, and then the narrower end of the egg, that's where your ash basket would be, and you can remove the ash basket there. So I really like the Kamado style smokers. Now, probably the one that maybe most people have heard of is the Big Green Egg. So you have this Big Green Egg, it's ceramic, and it probably weighs, I'm not exaggerating here, 200 pounds or more. So they are very, very heavy.
Dean,
and very, very big.
That's heavier than your casita.
Yeah, it would be. It would add a serious amount of GVWR to the old casita. So but the nice thing is you can actually buy smaller versions of it. And I've seen that the ceramic ones even as light as 40 or 50 pounds, even though that's still a little bit of weight. The other issue with those is by the time you nest your egg, I was kind of looking at different options. I thought, oh man, I'll get this Big Green Egg and this beautiful teak wood table. And the price tag on that was going to be about $2,500 for what I wanted, but that's not what you would have to spend. You could get into it for less money than that, even with a Primo or a Big Green Egg. But I ended up, I was at a big box store. In fact, I think it was Lowe's, and I came across this, char griller acorn Kamado cooker, and it's looks just like the Big Green Egg, except it's a different color. But rather than made out of ceramic, it's double-hulled metal with insulation in between. It's much, much lighter, and it's also much less expensive. You can pick them up for about $300. And I tell you what, I've gotten to the point that I don't even know if I aspire to have one of the ceramic smokers anymore. I am so happy with this Acorn smoker that if it ever wears out, and I've had it for 8 years and it's still almost like brand new, I'd probably just go out and buy another one. So that's kind of the direction that I've gone into. I still have a gas grill, but most of the time, if I'm going to have some fun smoking food and take a little bit of time on the weekend, rather than just throwing something on the gas grill after work, I'll use the smoker on the weekend.
Now, Dean, you said it at this point you feel that way. Do you feel like there was a learning curve for you with being able to, like, successfully cook on this Acorn Kamado cooker?
Oh, yeah, I think there's a little bit of a learning curve, but I don't think it was insurmountable. You know, a lot of it is, and I'm kind of one of those, if a little bit is good, more is better. So, and sometimes that mentality can get in your way. Like, one of the keys in using the smoker is make sure you don't get your charcoal or your lump charcoal too hot before you put your meat on. And I still will make that mistake occasionally. I made 3 racks of ribs for Memorial Day weekend. I did this on Monday. I got my lump charcoal a little hot. And at that point, once I put the ribs on, it took me 1 hour to get the temperature down where I wanted. Where on the other hand, if I would have kept the temperature low, gotten the ribs on, it's much easier to bring your temperature up than it is to bring your temperature down. So it's just little things like that. And at least I've never gotten perfect at doing it. But the nice thing is, particularly with pork, I think more so than beef, it's a fairly resilient cut of meat, particularly when you're talking about ribs and pork butts. And it's not like there's just one way on how to do this.
All right. So we know that when you're going to try to start something new, it's important to have the right gear, because if you don't have the right gear, you know, no matter how hard you try, it's not going to come out right. So we didn't want to overdo it with, like, the professional level stuff. So we just asked you to sort of compile a list of what you felt was, like, sort of a good basic, you know, set of gear to have when you wanted to start, you know, making something good enough to serve the family.
And we will put links for all of these things in the show notes. You can check out prices and see if it's something you actually want to go ahead and buy. So Dean, go ahead, get us started on the basic gear.
Okay. And again, there is a plethora of gear out there and lots of different directions that you can go. Here's the path that I happened to take, and I can't say that it was completely planned out. It's just kind of the way, this is the direction that it went. But like I said, I became really interested in these Kamado style cookers or these egg smokers. And the cool thing is there's a wonderful website out there called KamadoGuru.com. And it's just like, it reminds me a lot of a website or a forum for RVs. Well, you know, you can go to RV.net and learn all kinds of things about different types of RVs. You can go to KamadoGuru.com and learn lots of different things about different types of Kamado style cookers, even including the one that I have, which, again, I have the Char Griller Acorn Kamado cooker. And I've seen it as cheap as $199. I wish I would have bought it, put it in the attic, and then in a decade I'd be ready to break it in. But most of the time the price on my cooker is about $300. I mean, I got it at Lowe's, but you could find it at Home Depot. I've even seen them at Kroger's. They're at all different types of big box stores and even grocery stores. And I cannot speak highly enough about how effective and how wonderful that cooker is, that smoker is, for the price point. Now,
that's the basics. Now, what else do we have to get for all the accoutrements?
Okay. Now, there are a few other things that are going to help you out. Now, one of the first things I'm going to say, and again, I may sound a little bit like a charcoal snob here, but I do want to mention a couple things about charcoal. Not all charcoal is created equal. This is one of these things in life, and I'm kind of one of those, Laura and I will sometimes disagree a little bit. I'll go with a generic name, and Laura will be more likely to go with a brand name. When it comes to charcoal, go with good charcoal. But I also want to say for smoking food as opposed to grilling food, I much, much prefer lump charcoal to regular charcoal briquettes. I've had my Eggcorn for 8 years or so, and charcoal has never been inside my Eggcorn. I only use lump charcoal.
So what kind or what brand is your brand of choice?
Now, and again, now lump charcoal is a little more expensive than your briquettes, but it burns so much longer, and you have very, very little ash left over with it. You can get the big green lump. I've tried that before. It's great charcoal, but it tends to be a little pricey. And I'm going to be honest with you. I've tried a variety of different types of lump charcoals. My favorite brand is Royal Oak Hardwood Lump Charcoal. You can buy it at Walmart, and it's about half the price or less than half the price of some of the other more trendy or high-end lump charcoal. So you can do real well with that.
That's a great thing when the cheaper one is your favorite.
Yes, yes, and it is my favorite. Supposedly, you can take the big green egg lump and you can cook it even lower and lower temperatures. But I tell you what, I'm just not good enough as a smoker to hold those really, really low temps. So I am more than comfortable with the Royal Oak. Now, and let me mention another item that I really, really like. I have never used in my smoker. Now, it's a little different in historically when I've had charcoal grills. I don't use lighter fluid, so I don't use any type of lighter fluid or any type of chemical to ignite the lump charcoal. I have this really cool gadget. It's called a Looft lighter, and that's L-O-O-F-T, then lighter. And it is if you can imagine a curling iron that's about 4 inches longer and about, I don't know, about 2-3 times bulkier than a curling iron. This is what this Looft lighter looks like. So you can just basically plug it in, and I put the lump charcoal in the basket, and I ignite the lump charcoal in about 3 different areas. It'll take me less than 5 minutes to ignite the lump charcoal. And I just think it's much, much better to use something like that Looft lighter than using a charcoal lighter, which can leave a chemical residue or a chemical taste to your food.
That's a great tip. I mean, you're going to such great care to make the food really good. Why run that risk?
Yes, yes. And again, I also have to admit, it's a cool little toy to own. So the Looft lighter is now they can be, I can also say that one's a little pricey, but my brother where he works has a warehouse outlet, and then I got his discount on top of it. So I got that Looft lighter for a wonderful, wonderful price. But I've also noticed that the price on those has come down. But, you know, some people would say, oh my gosh, $80 for a charcoal lighter. I think I've seen them now down around 50 or so, and I think I managed to pick mine up for about $25. So that was pretty nice.
Dean, you need to start a blog and get sponsored by Looft lighter. Okay, and I'll arrange the deal, and I'll waive my 10% fee.
There you go. So, but that is a nice little toy that is very effective and is very durable, and I've had it for years, and it still works like it's brand new. Now, speaking of toys, one of my other favorite toys, and I always say this whole phrase, and Laura will just roll her eyes, is I love my Maverick ET732 dual probe meat thermometer. So, and this is a nifty little toy. What you can do with this is it is a meat thermometer, a digital meat thermometer. You have two probes. One probe is for the grill, so it tells you the temperature of the smoker or the grill, and then the other one is a meat thermometer. So if you're smoking a pork butt or a brisket, you want to insert it into the meat, stay away from the bone, and then you have a digital readout that will give you both temperatures. I happen to have a two-unit set, so I can even have, you know, the one unit sits next to the grill. The other one I can put in my pocket and stay within 300 feet of the house, go to the refrigerator to get a cold beverage or go out to the front yard, go check the mail, and I can still maintain I can still keep an eye on how the food's smoking on the Acorn.
So that sounds like a very useful tool. So that, I mean, you're not literally chained to the thing, right?
Right. You are not chained to it whatsoever. And actually, the Maverick that I have is a very nice unit. Again, you're probably looking at about $50 plus or minus on that. But, I mean, we live in a day and age of cell phones. There's even software and connections that you can monitor your grill temperature on your iPhone or your Android if you want to.
So it's, Dean, do you leave those probes in the whole time you're smoking?
Yes, yes. Okay. So it just basically maintains the temperature. So really the only thing I do when I'm smoking food 3/4 of the time is I'm adjusting the vent on top and the vent on bottom in the case of my particular smoker. It's all I'm doing. I don't even lift the lid to look at the meat. If I'm smoking a brisket or a pork butt, I might go 6 or 8 hours without even lifting the lid on the smoker.
Yeah, that takes a little faith, right?
So, well, I mean, basically, but when you have something like this this Maverick system that I have, it's the meat temperature. And I can even program it that if the smoker gets too hot, it'll beep at me. If the smoker temperature drops too far, it'll beep at me. So maybe I want to smoke something at 275 degrees. I'll program in a 25 degree upper limit, a 25 degree lower limit, and it really takes the guesswork out of it.
Is that a pretty normal range, though, for the temperature and how high or how low it can go above or below?
Hey, it's normal for Casita Dean. So, and again, it's kind of one of these things. What we're talking about here, we're talking about throwing meat on a fire. It doesn't have to be hardcore rocket science. So for me, I may try to shoot for 275, and if I keep it somewhere between 300 and 250, on average, it's going to stay, you know, I'm still going to average about 275. So I don't really worry about it too much.
All right, let's move into the books. So you are a researcher. You had some favorite reference books that helped you through this process. What did you like
best? Yes, yes. And again, just because I'm really interested in barbecue style cookbooks, I've gotten to the point, I think I have enough. So, but if you want the ultimate barbecue cookbook, it's got to be Adam Perry Lang's book, Serious Barbecue. He has a history of he's a gourmet chef that got infatuated with barbecue and basically blended the two. So if you want to really do highly skilled, high-end barbecue smoking, that would be the book. But let me also say, I like having that book just because I like having that book. But if the book that I use week in and week out, it is easy. It's Big Bob Gibson's barbecue book. And actually, he was a smoker back in the 1920s, 1930s. The book was actually put out by Chris Lilly, his son-in-law. And in fact, it's interesting, the Memphis in May International Barbecue Festival, which is in May each year, Big Bob Gibson, his barbecue company just won the international contest for barbecue in Memphis, and they've won it before, but they are the most recent ones. And this cookbook is so simple and so easy to follow. And they're based out of Decatur, Alabama, which is in northern Alabama. In fact, a couple years ago, I won a little raffle and I got 2 free nights in a hotel. And I was in another part of the state, but the hotel was in Bowling Green. It's like, well, I live in Bowling Green. Why do I want to spend 2 nights in Bowling Green in a hotel? Well, come to find out, this hotel is in other places. I could use it wherever. Laura and I were planning a little road trip down to the beach in Panama City, and we decided to eat our way across the South and barbecue. So we're going through Alabama. They happened to have one of those hotels. I spent 2 nights in Laura and I did in Decatur, Alabama, so I could eat Big Bob Gibson barbecue. So
you ate your way across the South. Dean, how do you stay so fit?
Yes.
Well, that's another episode.
Yes. So Big Bob Gibson barbecue, and then Dreamland barbecue, which is, if you're a University of Alabama fan, you're going to know Tuscaloosa. And in fact, on a recent trip to New Orleans, I did the pilgrimage, and a group of us guys did the pilgrimage to to Dreamland, the original one in Tuscaloosa. But there's a really fun one in Montgomery, Alabama, that I actually mentioned in one of our Campground of the Week episodes. So, yes, and I love eating barbecue with Laura because she, like, you know, she'll touch a rib or whatever, and she's fine with it, particularly if we're out at a restaurant. Or her favorite is just pulled pork. So we always order the sampler platter. She eats the pulled pork, and then I eat everything else.
That's a good deal for you.
Yes, it's a good deal. And let me mention one other thing. If I go to a barbecue restaurant and I'm by myself, I always order the same thing, pulled pork, beans, and slaw. So that way I can sort of – that's the litmus test for me to go from a barbecue restaurant to a barbecue restaurant is it's got to be pulled pork, beans, and slaw.
Any other books that you'd recommend people grabbing?
Yeah, one other book. And that's Paul Kirk's Championship Barbecue Sauces. It's just a little paperback book, but it's cover to cover sauces, mops, marinades, rubs that you can make at home. And in fact, you know, we'll talk about it more in a minute. I'm a big fan of rubs, but you don't have to buy the rubs. The rubs are fine to either buy for yourself or to give them away as gifts, or people will buy me bottles of rubs. And that's really nice, but you can also just make them very, very, easily. So for me, those are the three books that I really like having, but my go-to book is definitely the Big Bob Gibson. And if I want to make my own rubs, then I like, Paul Kirk's Championship Barbecue Sauces and Rubs book.
Now, Dean, you already talked about how you have chosen the charcoal grill for your smoking. And you also mentioned that you have a regular old gas grill that you like when you just like during the week are going to throw something on the grill for dinner, you know, easy peasy. Are there other options out there that people should sort of be aware of and maybe explore a little before deciding on which direction they want to go?
Yeah, I think like my brother, for example, my brother will only do charcoal or lump charcoal. If he's going to smoke or grill something, it's got to have that charcoal taste to it. So there's always the old standby of a charcoal grill. I'm kind of one of those. I'm probably a little more pragmatic. I like having a gas grill. So when I get home at the end of the day, I can just go out, turn it on, ignite it, and, you know, throw whatever it is that we're going to throw on the grill. In fact, I got a 12-year-old gas grill that I still use. Now, when Laura and I decided to start camping and we got our casita, we wanted something obviously a little more portable. I have a Weber Q1200 portable grill, and I also got the stand, so I'm not limited to putting it on the picnic table because it's a pretty small gas grill. And I tell you, and again, it's one of those things you can go talk to campers and see what they have to say about portable gas grills, and you're probably going to have 3, 4, 5 of them that will, you know, hit the list. And I will again speak highly of the Weber Q1200.
We hear that from everybody. Those Weber grills are very popular and loved by RVers and campers.
We've been happy with ours.
Yes. Yes. I just love ours. And Laura was even able to get it with a blue lid. So she was a happy camper. There's electric grills and even smokers. I've not really used electric before. And then there's also, I am preoccupied with, pellet grills and pellet smokers. And if I'm not mistaken, did you guys get a pellet grill?
Yes, I did. I'm preoccupied with a pellet grill right now too. So
she loves it.
And I really, I've only been using it for about a month now. I'm super happy with it so far. I have no buyer's remorse, but I am, again, I'm still on the learning curve.
Yeah, but I've heard a lot of folks speak really highly of either the pellet grill or even the pellet smoker. And then again, within the realm of grills, I'm going to throw smokers in as a type of grill. And then there's all different types of smokers. So anything that I just mentioned above, whether charcoal or gas or pellet or electric, you can have within smokers too. And usually with smokers are something that you cook it. the food at a lower temperature. Grills are something that you're going to cook the food at a higher temperature.
Right. So just to chime in real quick on what I have, which is the Cabela's pellet grill and smoker. So what it does is it's electric. So it has all the different settings and the different temperature, like the temperature gauge. So you can choose as one of your settings, the smoke setting, and it'll keep it at that low temperature. And you can monitor that via an electric, you know, temperature gauge. So you can both smoke and grill on it, which has been pretty cool so far. So, but I look forward to taking some of the things that I'm learning from this episode and maybe applying them to that.
Oh, absolutely. Dean, talk to us about some of the basic smoking tools that we need to go along with this. And we'll move into the next segment.
Of course, you need utensils, you know, things to flip or tongs or, you know, turners and forks. And to tell the truth, I will not use a meat fork on anything that I'm smoking on the grill because you're basically piercing the meat and allowing the juices to exit too fast. Okay, over the years, I've been given different utensil sets for barbecuing and smoking. But I tell you, really what I like the best are just my kitchen tongs and just things that I have in the kitchen drawer. Some of the barbecue sets, I think the equipment's too big. And I tell you, something that I really, really like, particularly if you're dealing with like a 15-pound brisket or a 12-pound pork butt, are silicone mittens. So you can just slip those silicone mittens on, and I can pick up the brisket and flip it, or if I need to wrap it, or I can take the ribs and flip it. And I find that easier than trying to use some of the big bulky utensils. And I would be real careful if you're looking for a utensil set. Make sure when they fit in your hand that, you know, sometimes you want them to be spring-loaded, but sometimes the springs are so stiff that you're wrestling with the utensil rather than focusing in on flipping the meat or doing whatever. If you're going to cook a lot of ribs, a rib rack is nice. So rather than laying the ribs down, like I can put about 3 sets of ribs on my smoker, but with a rib rack, you sit them up on their side and I can slide in up to like 5 racks of ribs. So if you're really into ribs, a rib rack is nice. And again, some of this stuff is toys. You don't have to have a beer can chicken rack, but that's kind of fun. And I can smoke a couple of chickens at one time if I want to. Cedar planks are real nice for smoking or grilling fish. And then also just having some things like some baskets and skewers for vegetables is nice to have around as well.
Yeah, I'm a good old good tips because I love the tongs and the mitts, and I'm good to go usually. All right, Dean, thank you so much for that. I think that is a very practical list of gear, you know, that people can look for when they're trying to kind of start this good old game of smoking and grilling. And we are going to be back in a minute, and you're going to tell us more about what we're going to do with all that. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. We are here with Casita Dean May, and he just gave us a terrific segment about smoking and grilling. He went over all of the basic gear, and it really was almost like a mini gear guide, wasn't it, Stephanie? I mean, you could buy some of these things for the griller in the family or the smoker in the family.
Yep, and you can find it all on the show notes.
Now, for segment 2, Dean's going to give us the basic process, and I want to really learn here. I want to really soak this in. But first, we have a sponsored message from our friends at Jayco.
You can go big with Jayco's White Hawks, which is one of the leading ultralight travel trailers. The 2017 White Hawks feature impeccable attention to detail, industry-leading construction, convenient design, and Jayco's 2-year limited warranty that makes getting down to fun fast and easy. Visit your local Jayco dealer or jayco.com for more information. Jayco, generations of family fun.
And the 2018s are just starting to hit the lots, right, Stephanie?
Yep, we've been seeing some
floor models. And they redesigned the outside graphics, and there's some really cool new floor models. Check out the 2018 Whitehawk 29BH. That is going to be a best-selling floor plan, I promise. But enough about Jayco and Whitehawks, because I kind of miss our Whitehawk a little
bit. Yeah, we'll have to have John Fisher back on the show sometime
about. But right now, we have Casita Dean May on the show, all right? And all
the
star power that he brings. So, Dean, let's talk about the basic process here. Can you get us started on some of your best tips and techniques?
Okay. All right. One of the things that I really like is I like rubs. And what rubs are a combination of seasonings that you basically apply to the meat or you can, you know, rub on the meat. There's basically three different types of rubs. You have a sugar-based rub. And again, any of these, you know, like a sugar-based rub, it's not going to just be sugar. There's going to be other seasonings with it. But the primary ingredient is sugar. I would caution folks to be a little careful with that. Anything that is sugar-based is a little more prone to burning. So if you're going to use a sugar-based rub, watch out for the burning, particularly if your grill temperatures or smoker temperatures get too high. And then you have a salt-based rub. So your salt-based rubs would add other seasonings. And again, they're very tasty as well. But again, if you're not careful with those, you can make your meat a little salty. Probably not a big deal on a big 15-pound brisket, but that's still a little bit of a variable, particularly on something like ribs. You could get them too salty. That's the reason why my favorite type of rub tends to be a paprika-based rub. So the paprika will add the nice flavor, but it also hosts the other seasonings that you put in. And, you know, the other seasonings could be chili powder, it could be cumin, it could be, you know, a little bit of salt, a little bit of sugar. So for me, when I buy a rub, I tend to go with a paprika-based rub. But still, I'll still have folks that will buy me for a gift, you know, at Father's Day or Christmas or birthday or whatever. They'll give me a rub, and I do not let rub go to waste, so I'll take care of it. So I really like rubs. There's also marinades. You can marinate your meat maybe the night before. So there's all different types of marinades. Now, I would also like to say, now, be a little careful with your marinades. If you're using a salt-based marinade, letting the meat soak overnight could make the meat salty. So like we have I can go to the local grocery store and I can buy something called Del seasoning. And what Del's is a bottle. It's kind of like soy sauce with some other seasonings put in. And it's great to marinate pork chops or steaks for an hour, 2, 3, 4 hours before you put them on. But you wouldn't want to use the Del seasoning the night before because it would make the steaks or the pork chops too salty.
Do you think that's the most common mistake people make is maybe oversalting?
Yeah, I think you do have to be careful with the salt. Again, it's going to be less of an issue on a 15-pound brisket, but yes, you can get your ribs too salty. I have made that mistake where I've applied the salt-based rub a little too heavily.
All right. Well, now this is something new for me. I've never heard of the term mops, but apparently that's one of the ways that we can help season our meat.
Yes. So in one of the things, a mop is a vinegar-based solution that has some other seasonings that you'll put in with the vinegar. And what you'll do is you'll use, actually, it looks like a little old-school mop, a wooden handle with a mop end, and you'll just dunk it in the vinegar-based solution, and you can use that to baste either your ribs, you know, while you're cooking them, or the pork butt, or whatever the case may be. So I've used mops a little bit. Again, I tend to be one of those. Once I put the meat in the smoker, I leave it alone until I get to that last hour or two of cooking, and then I'll do some final things to it. But mops are nice, and vinegar will tenderize the meat. So you can use vinegars either as a marinade to help tenderize, or you can use it as a mop. Or the other thing you can do, you can also inject meat. So you can have large syringes and you can have your marinades that you can actually inject into the meat. For me, particularly with a pork butts have enough fat in them that you really don't have to inject anything in them. The whole idea with low and slow cooking on a smoker is to cook low enough but still with enough heat that the fat in the meat renders and basically melts through the meat. So you really don't have to inject a marinade into a cut of meat like a pork butt.
Yeah, so keep it simple, Sully, right? We want to, like, don't get fancy because it doesn't necessarily make it better.
Yep. And I think the other key piece to smoking or grilling is obviously your grill temperature. For me, low and slow is kind of the way you go when it comes to smoking meat. I like to keep it below 300. So I'll smoke my meat. Most of the time, I tend to shoot for 275 plus or minus 25 degrees. If I've got more time, I might shoot for 250 plus or minus. But the other thing is, the lower you go, the more likelihood you get into of your charcoal going out or your lump charcoal burning out because it doesn't have enough oxygen. I've heard of folks that can actually smoke large cuts of meat at sub 200. I am not good enough, nor do I have the patience to do that. And I've talked to some folks out there that are much more experienced than me. And really, 300 and below, you're doing just fine smoking your food. Now, if you're going to be grilling things like, you know, burgers, dogs, chicken, you know, boneless, skinless chicken breast, stuff like that, you're going to be grilling at a higher temperature, you know, maybe 300 to 450 degrees. And then you can also sear. And searing is really cooking. Like, for example, if I'm going to eat a steak, I prefer medium rare, maybe even rare. And what you're going to do is just sear that steak at maybe 500-600 degrees on both sides, and you cook the meat fast as opposed to ribs or a pork butt that you're going to cook really, really slowly.
All right. Now, what do we need to know about kind of like once we know the temperature we're going for, really determining how the heat is being distributed in our smoker or our grill?
All right. Now, and the way I think about that is I either think about direct cooking or indirect cooking. When you're grilling, you know, when you're grilling burgers and hot dogs, it's direct. You're basically, you've got your grill grate and right underneath you've got your charcoal. When you smoke food, you tend to have some type of indirect method of cooking the meat. Like, for example, in my Kamado smoker, I have what's called a ceramic heat deflector. So it actually sits on top of 3 or 4 inches on top of the lump charcoal, and then the heat comes around the heat deflector. There's three sort of ceramic prongs. And this, imagine a pizza pan that sort of has a little arc cut out in three places, and it basically just sits down there and allows the heat to come up around the heat deflector. So I don't have to worry about flare-ups. I don't have to worry about things catching on fire. I don't have to worry about maybe that sugar-based rub getting too hot and burning because you want that heat deflection. But there are other smokers like barrel-style smokers. You know, imagine a 55-gallon drum, metal drum, that's on its side and cut in half, and then you can just, and that would be your grill area. But then on the side would be the smoker box. So on the side of the barrel would maybe be about the size of a 5-gallon bucket. You put your charcoal in the smoker box, and it's connected to the barrel itself. And that's what allows the temperature, the heat, and the smoke to come through. So when you're smoking food, the whole idea is to do it indirectly rather than directly. I've even played around a little bit on my gas grill. Like, for example, I got to have a gas grill that's got 3 burners or more. Because what I want to do is, like, for example, with my 3-burner system, I've got a left burner, a right burner, and a center burner. And maybe I'm going to do a pork loin. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to turn the left burner on low, the right burner on low, not turn the center burner on at all, and put that pork loin in the center where it's getting the indirect heat from the left and the right. So really, meat placement with smoking is important because you don't want the meat to cook too fast.
All right, that makes sense. Now, what else do we need to worry about with this basic process of smoking?
Okay, now you can have steaming pans. Now, my Kamado smoker, they say it is such a tight smoker and it maintains the moisture of the meat inside the smoker, you don't need a steaming pan. Actually, I still have a small 13 by 9 cheap $1 or $2 baking pan that I will put a little bit of water in, and I will place that on top of the heat deflector, then the grate, and then put the meat on top. And that also, that steam pan will catch some of the drippings off of the meat, so it keeps the grill and my heat deflector a little nicer. Something else that's nice is to add some wood chips to your lump charcoal. So if you like a hickory flavoring, you can add some hickory chunks or some hickory chips, and then there's apple chips and cherry chips and all different types of wood chips.
For you, Dean, are you talking just a handful, or any advice on how much in terms of wood chips?
Since I'm smoking, I want something that's going to burn a little longer, so I like little chunks of hickory, about the size of a golf ball to maybe as big as almost a baseball. And if you want them to burn even longer, you can soak them in water, and plus that will also create a little bit more smoke. I would just use 2 or 3 chunks is about it. So that's what I would tend to do, because chips are going to burn faster than the chunks. And
I'm starting to think that Casita Dean is the Andrew Skurka of grilling and smoking. I think he was being a little humble at the beginning of the show, but we're going to let you slide on that.
Okay. All right. But I have a caution, though. Be very, very careful with mesquite. Mesquite is a very powerful aroma. And if you're not careful, it will overwhelm. In fact, I've never tried to use mesquite in the smoker, and maybe you're not supposed to, but I can tell you the little bit that I've used with mesquite, I've not had a lot of luck with it. I think mesquite would be better for searing a steak, and you just want that intense mesquite flavor for just a few minutes. But I would not use mesquite in a smoker, but maybe somebody out there does that's a whole lot more skilled or knows mesquite better than I do.
Now, what do you do if you have a flare up, like all of a sudden your charcoal is too hot, you need to take it down? How do you deal with that?
Now, the nice thing is with a lot of smokers, they're relatively airtight, so I can control the oxygen flow with my smoker just by dealing with the vent on the top of the smoker and the vent on the bottom. So if I get a flare up, I just close the lid. It cuts off the oxygen supply, and the flare up is gone in a matter of seconds. Now, sometimes on gas grills where they're not a gas grill, or some of your just everyday charcoal grills, you don't have that luxury. So having a spray bottle is not, you can do that. So a spray bottle is nice as well. But the nice thing is with smokers, one, because you're doing indirect, you don't have to worry about flare-ups. And in some circumstance, if you end up with one, it's real easy to cut the oxygen supply.
All right. So you've given us the gear. You've given us a lot of the techniques that we need to think about before we smoke. But let's walk through the process from start to finish. What does it look like if I want, I know you make ribs, you know, on Mother's Day, right? You barbecued for your family on Mother's Day. So what's the process from start to finish? What does that look like?
Okay, well, you know, at some point in the week, I'm going to decide, all right, this weekend, I'm going to smoke something on the acorn. And I'm going to make up my mind, am I going to do ribs or maybe a pork butt? Could do a pork loin. Once in a blue moon, I'll do a brisket, because, you know, you're really getting into a big cut of meat there, a whole brisket, you know, maybe 15 pounds. That's going to take a lot of time. And usually if I'm going to do ribs, it's going to be 2 racks, sometimes 3 racks. On occasion, I've done 4 or 5 racks of ribs. So you're going to make sure your meat's thawed out. So if it's midweek, get it in the refrigerator. So come Friday night, it's thawed out. Then the night before, I would take the meat, unwrap it, put on my favorite rub, cover it up, just put it back in the refrigerator. The next morning, depending on and I've been known to get up at 3:30 in the morning to have a 15-pound brisket on the smoker by 5 o'clock. Now, Laura thinks that's crazy, but I kind of call that fun. But ribs are a little easier. You know, ribs, if you want to have them for dinner at, you know, 5, 6 o'clock, you don't have to get them on until maybe 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So, but usually as I'm getting ready to light the smoker, I'll go ahead and pull the meat out of the refrigerator and let the meat sit on the counter for maybe 30 to 60 minutes. So it's not all at refrigerator temperature when you put it on the grill. It begins to warm up a little bit. Then, you know, of course, I'll get the lump charcoal, put it in the grill. I'll light it with the luft lighter. You don't have to, as opposed to like regular charcoal and you're getting ready to grill a bunch of burgers, you want all of your charcoal gray. That's not the case with smoking and with lump charcoal. I'll have a, you know, my basket full of the lump charcoal, and it's as big around as maybe a large platter. I'll only ignite it in three places, open up the vents a little bit, and it will continue to ignite itself. So it's not necessary for your charcoal to be gray, nor would you even want that with the lump. If you want to, throw in some hickory chips. Then I'll put my heat deflector in. I'll put my water pan on top. I'll put the grill on top. I'll get my ET 732 dual probe meat thermometer. I'll get it ready to go. I'll put the meat on the grate, put the meat probe in, put the grill temperature probe in place, basically close the lid, and I'll open my vents just enough to see that temperature begin to rise. And again, I'm monitoring that. And my main thing is I really don't want that smoker to get too hot, because like I said earlier, it's harder to bring temperature down than it is to increase it.
All right, so, that makes sense. So then you've got the meat there on the grill, you've got or on the smoker, you have the lid on, and now it has to do its work.
Right. And now let's imagine that we're doing a 15-pound brisket. It's 5 o'clock in the morning. I really is all I have to do then is watch the go brew some coffee, watch the sun come up, watch the smoke waft out of the grill, and I just have to watch my digital meat thermometer and just make very, very slight adjustments. And when I say slight adjustments on those vents on my smoker, I'm opening or closing a 16th of an inch, an 1/8 of an inch, perhaps a 1/4 of an inch. So you really, I mean, it's not hard work here. So, and I'll just basically, I will not do anything with that brisket until maybe 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
And then okay? You switch from coffee to beer at that point?
Usually about noon.
Okay, fair enough.
Yes, so you'll switch over to, put some water in between, start with coffee, drink some water, switch over to a nice IPA or a nice stout and be ready to finish the smoking process. Again, I like to keep temperatures, under 300 degrees if I can. For me, ribs will usually take 3 or 4 hours to cook. A 8 to 10 pound pork butt will take maybe 8 hours to cook. A whole brisket, you're looking at 10, maybe 12 hours. And then when I get down to the last hour or so, whether it's ribs, a pork butt, or a brisket, that's when you'll maybe lift the lid, put some sauce on your ribs if you want them. A lot of folks, like Laura, for example, and one of the most famous style of Memphis-style ribs is dry rub, because, again, the rub is going to caramelize. So you're going to get a stickiness even without the sauce. But a lot of people like a little extra sauce. And there's also a technique called the Texas crutch. And what the Texas crutch is, and some people say, hey, it's a crutch. You don't need to do that. But some other folks say that it adds to the cooking process. You can wrap your ribs after you've let them glaze a little bit with the barbecue sauce. Or what I do with a brisket is I will wrap the entire brisket, put a cup of water in, and then you're allowing it to steam a little bit as well. So that's nice. And you'll put that back on the smoker, cook it in an additional hour, maybe for a brisket, even a couple of hours. So I really do nothing with the meat until about an hour before it's done.
All right. Now, then once it's done, you've got to do nothing with the meat for a little while too, right?
Yes. Yeah. I think it's important to let the meat rest and allow the juices within the meat to distribute appropriately. This sounds a little crazy. I like to let ribs, a pork butt, a brisket rest at a minimum about an hour. And if it's a pork butt or a brisket, I'll let it rest for even up to 2 hours. Now, I have this goofy little thing that I don't know where I picked it up. It's going to be wrapped in foil at that point, you know, when I pull it off the grill. And if it's not wrapped, I'll go ahead and wrap it in foil. I have an old Coleman plastic cooler, and I put the wrapped meat inside the cooler. Then I even have, now this is the really goofy part, I'll take an old towel and blanket it over top of the wrapped meat, put the lid on the cooler, and then not touch it for another 1 to 2 hours.
Oh, this might be your secret weapon, the Coleman cooler and towel.
That was a wedding gift in 1983. Unfortunately, it's red. So anytime you see casita pictures on Instagram or Facebook of our casita and all of Laura's blue stuff, you'll see the red cooler somewhere.
Luckily, it survived that lost decade of the 1990s for you when you weren't really doing so much grilling and smoking.
But I put other things in the cooler.
Glad to hear that. All right. Then you're going to either pull the meat if you want that pulled pork, or you're going to slice it if you want that brisket, like you're going to first serving, and everybody's going to ooh and ah and congratulate.
All right. And I think some RVFTA podcast listeners have oohed and ahed at your
whenever he posts on Facebook, it kind of makes us all a little sad that we're not there at the table.
I want to mention one other thing really quick that is a lot of fun. When I do a brisket, I don't do just the flat. I actually do a whole brisket. And the cool thing about a whole brisket, there's actually two cuts of meat. There's the flat, and then there's a fatty area that connects it's called the point or the tip that connects to it. So when your brisket is finished, you can take a knife and slice that fat layer, removing the flat from the point or the tip. Now, the point or the tip has more fat in it than the flat does. The flat is ready to eat, and this is the way when you think of brisket, you think of sliced brisket. So you take the brisket and you slice it and you serve it. But what you do with the point is you can save it for another day, put it in the refrigerator, or if you want to, if you got enough people hungry enough, it's got to go back on the smoker again, cook for another 2 hours to finish rendering the rest of the fat out of that, take it off the smoker, cut it into chunks, maybe let it rest a little bit, cut it into chunks, toss it with your favorite barbecue sauce, and that's what's called burnt ends. So you can take the burnt ends, which is a different cut of meat from the flat or the point, which is different than the flat is the part that you slice, and then the tip or the point is the part that you can cook later. So
burnt
that's really, really nice.
Are my favorite.
They're awesome.
There you go.
All right. Now, you have given us a lot of ideas for creating great brisket or pulled pork or a pork butt, but now we want to know what's going to go on the sides of all of those things. So everybody's going to hold on. We'll be back in a second, and Dean's going to talk about some of his favorite sides that you can prepare while that meat is resting in the Coleman cooler. Stay tuned.
Stay tuned. Welcome back to the show, everybody. We are here with Casita Dean May, and we're getting ready for segment three. We're going to talk about some favorite recipes for sides, and they're all simple. Dean promises they're all simple. But first, we have a sponsored message from our friends at Thetford.
Thetford is the industry expert and innovation leader, and they've been making RV travel a more pleasant experience for over 50 years. And maybe if you've been doing a lot of smoking and grilling at the campground, you might need a little bit of extra help keeping those tanks smelling clean and fresh.
What could she mean?
I don't know. So AquaChem is America's most trusted holding tank deodorant, and you have lots of options for using it, from the powerful AquaChem liquid to the convenient toss-ins to the new shots. And you have lots of different options for keeping your tank in operating condition.
Those shots are as cute as
something can be that you
something
put
can
in
be
the toilet.
That you're throwing
exactly.
In the toilet. They're the cutest thing you'll ever throw
you'll
in your toilet.
You'll ever throw in your toilet. All right. For a complete lineup of products, visit Thetford.com.
Dean, we need sides. And how many sides do you usually make when you smoke or grill? Is there like, do you do three, two? Do you get to choose?
Usually just two, to be honest with you. And again, I love beans with whatever type of barbecue that you're going to have. And I'm also a fan of coleslaw. Even though I do not have a recipe for coleslaw, I'm sort of on that quest for the perfect coleslaw recipe. I've tried several. I like them, but there's a lot of diversity within the coleslaw realm, whether you want a vinegar-based or a mayonnaise-based.
Vinegar, please.
Okay, there you go. I love them both.
Well, can we talk about
I've heard about your famous baked beans.
Yeah, can we talk about Jack Stack barbecue beans?
Simple. You take a 32-ounce can of pork and beans, get you a cup of a pulled or chopped brisket or pork butt, put in a cup of your favorite barbecue sauce. Jack Stacks would like it if you used his barbecue sauce, but I'm also a big fan of Sweet Baby Ray's. About anything that Sweet Baby Ray's puts out is really good, but I'll go with their original as one of my favorites. Throw in 4 heaping tablespoons of brown sugar, a tablespoon of chili powder, half a cup of ketchup, half a cup of water. Just combine all the ingredients. I like to put it, you can put it on top of the stove inside the house if you want to. But what I like to do is use my cast iron Dutch oven. And while the meat is resting, I'll put this back on the smoker. Don't put a lid on it and just let the beans cook for about an hour on the smoker at around 300 degrees. And you may want to stir them every once in a while, but the absolute best barbecue beans that you can find and so easy to make.
All right. Now, I know that this episode isn't a lot about you're eating your veggies, but you've got some in case people really want to make sure they get a little healthy food in with these meals.
Right. And again, I'll use the smoker while the meat is resting. And the vegetables, you don't want to cook until 15, 20 minutes before the meat's ready anyway. You can use some type of grill basket, or you can use skewers or whatever. There's all different types of things that you can do. I actually like using a basket that's got lots of holes in it. So when your marinade from the vegetables drips on the charcoal, it creates a little bit more smoke. But I'll just pick whatever I happen to have around the house in terms of raw vegetables, maybe broccoli, onions, baby carrots, bell peppers of different colors, cut them into, small little chunks, toss a little olive oil, and really it's in terms just enough to coat it. Then you can throw in just a little salt and pepper and put it on on the smoker in the grill basket and basically stir fry it for 20 minutes or so. Now, and I like balsamic vinegar, so I'll even, along with the olive oil, maybe toss it with a little balsamic vinegar to give it a little bit of a sweet wang. But some people don't like the balsamic vinegar, so.
I always like a little tang. So I also always like some potatoes. I've got to admit, I'm in that camp. Everything's better with potatoes. So how should we make them?
And again, that's one of these that's just, these potatoes are just buttery, soft, and smooth to eat. But just take 6 to 8 medium potatoes, peel them, half them, and then cut them into about quarter-inch slices. Take a large onion, cut it in half crossways, then cut each half into eighths, and then just pull the little petals apart. 6 tablespoons of butter, salt, pepper, maybe some minced garlic to taste. Just throw the potatoes, the onions on a large piece of aluminum foil, throw on the butter and the seasonings, and then seal it up. You know, seal the aluminum foil where you basically have a nice large pouch of the potatoes. Again, put it back on the smoker, maybe a little warmer than 300 degrees. I'll usually shoot for about 325. Cook it for about 20 minutes on one side, go out, flip the pouch, cook it about another 15 to 20, and some of the potatoes will begin to get browned, and then others will just sort of be nice and soft and buttery, and it's a great, easy recipe to go along with maybe the meat and beans or whatever. But I, like I said, I usually only have a couple of sides with the entree.
Now, I love the idea. It was like a little bit of a lightning bolt to go, oh, yeah, you do this while the meat is resting. Like, that makes total sense. And it kind of, like, gives you something to do. And then you're not, like, rushing to the table with the meat that should be resting still, right? It, like, keeps you focused on making the rest of dinner during that time. So I think that's a great idea for sort of organizing the method of how you're going to get everything to the table. So, well, Dean, thank you so very much.
Yeah, this was awesome. I really appreciate it. Another great one-on-one episode.
I have learned so much. I'm really excited to make more use out of my pellet grill. I've done a lot of grilling on it so far, but I haven't done smoking on it. And I'm really excited to sort of listen to this episode back when I'm not actually asking questions.
bucket list item for me now is to meet up with you again and to share a meal together. It just sounds like it'd be a lot of fun. Thank you so much, Dean.
I think that would be a lot of fun, and I'd be really interested in hearing some of your experiences, whether grilling or smoking with the pellet grill.
Well, Dean, that's going to be our 201 episode, okay? Our smoking and grilling 201, because you have even more stuff to share that we couldn't even squeeze into this episode. So we'll have you back on. We'll do another episode.
And again, if you were listening and there was a grill or a smoker or some gear that was interesting
to
you, a recipe, go to the show notes for this episode. We will put everything there for you. It was jam-packed with content. Thank you so
thanks,
much, Dean. We'll see you at the
campground. Well, you're welcome.
I'll see you at his kitchen table. Bye.
Sounds good.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. It's time for the RVFTA News Roundup, which is sponsored by our friends at Campgrounds of America.
Yeah, and first of all, thank you so much to Casita Dean for that awesome episode. I just feel like he really knocked it out of the park again,
and
as
you know,
always.
He's done some smoking and grilling at KOAs. He's gone to the Townsend KOA.
He's been everywhere.
He loved it because there's an egg camper rally at the Townsend KOA every year.
Yeah. He loves those egg campers. All right. So now KOA wants you to know that the branding on individual campgrounds is going to make your trip planning easier, and it's going to help you make sure that you find a campground that matches you, right? Because we're all looking for different things in a campground.
Yeah. And there's over 500 KOAs now, and I read just recently that over 300 of them now are branded either Journey, Holiday, or Resort, and they're moving in the next couple of years to having them all branded as either a Journey, a Holiday, or a Resort. And basically, KOA wants you to know what you're getting and what to expect before you show up.
Right, but those brands aren't going to help you unless you know what they mean, right? So
let's break it down.
So a Journey is a campground that is good for that overnight stop, that brief stay. You know, there's a lot of qualities. So like, it's going to be close to major roadways that you're driving.
Which doesn't mean a highway is ripping by the campground.
Yeah.
But it means that it's within a couple miles of a major highway. And it also means there's going to be long pull-through sites for people who want the ease of getting in and out of a pull-through late at night and early in the morning.
Now, they also may not have amenities that you don't care about paying for.
It's
if
probably
you're
not
just
going to be a resort-style pool and an on-site restaurant necessarily. I mean, it may have those things, but it's more likely going to be a clean, comfortable place to spend a night or two on your Journey, as it were.
Right. So then the next step is a Holiday. And this is going to be that kind of campground that makes a great base camp for exploring a nearby like destination or region.
Right. So if you have a week's vacation or a long 4-day weekend, you might spend half of your time hanging out at the campground doing fun stuff. But the other half of your time, you're going to go out into a national park or you're going to go visit a city. It's not that all-inclusive resort experience where you don't have to leave, but there's going to be plenty of fun things to do there and some great things to see in the area. It's your base camp for adventure.
Now, the third brand is Resorts. All right. And that means that really this could be an all-inclusive camping experience where you pull in, you park your rig, and then you hang out for the next week on that campground
you,
with your family.
And you don't have to leave.
They're not like trapping you.
You're not trapped there.
Okay?
KOA would not do that to you. But there's going to be an on-site restaurant. There's going to be organized activities led by an activities director.
Yeah.
There's going to be entertainment all day.
Recreation. Like volleyball courts or basketball courts.
Nice pools, volleyball, basketball, all that stuff. So literally, it almost doesn't matter where you are geographically. A KOA resort is the vacation.
Right. So you can visit KOA.com or you can download the free app and you can start finding your perfect campground for your next journey today. All right. Now, we have a very important item to address in our news roundup. It is always exciting to announce our next Save the Date, and we've got one for you. And it's a bit in the future, but we're already dreaming.
I think our listeners know at this point, we love the Tampa RV Super Show. Like, I literally am in love with the Tampa
RV.
So much fun.
There's nothing like leaving New Jersey in January.
Well, that is a big part of it.
Done.
So, like, getting out of New Jersey and flying to Tampa in the winter. I mean, first of all, we show up and we're like, why don't we live here in Tampa? Okay.
In January,
but then
it
is just the best RV show experience in the country. It's huge. It's fun. It's got a carnival-like atmosphere. There's live music, live entertainment. There's Magic Mike, who makes balloons for the kids, hundreds of balloons for the kids. Even when they come back every single day and like Magic Mike, give me another balloon. And we just have such a good time there. And then guess what, people? Disney World's an hour away.
Yeah. Well, so we are going. It's official. We are going to be there in January of 2018. The Super Show is January 17th through the 21st in 2018. All right. So if you're thinking about traveling south, if you're going to be, you know, by way of Tampa, definitely think about putting it on your calendar. We had a lot of podcast listeners, friends stop by. We hung out last year. We really had a great time.
Yeah, we did meet and greets every day, and it was really nice. We had podcast listeners showing up to say hello, and it is always exciting to meet you and see the diversity of who you are and the types of rigs you have. I mean, we have people listening to the podcast that are in diesels and people that are in pop-up campers and everything in between.
We have, if you're a newer listener or if you kind of tuned it out anytime we talked about it in the past and you're saying, oh, what is this, an RV show? People travel to an RV show. We have lots of content on this RV show because we've attended the last 2 years in a row. So you can look, you know, at our blog posts on our blog about the Tampa RV show, or you can also listen to a couple of our past podcasts on the topic if you just kind of want to get an idea of what it's all about and what happens there and why it's a fun place to be. So we'd love to see you in January. We are happy that it is officially on our calendar.
You would love to see you in Tampa in January. Forget seeing us. It is just a wonderful, I mean, look, people go to Florida in the winter for a reason, and it's a good reason. It's gorgeous there. The Tampa area is gorgeous as well. So hopefully we'll see you at the Tampa RV Super Show.
We will. All right. So that wraps up our show for this week. Another big, huge thanks to Casita Dean for always showing up with far more amazing content than we can ever even squeeze into an hour.
He brings the content. It's like a content smackdown.
Yeah, I run out of ink printing.
We never get through all his notes. Well, first of all, we never get through all his notes.
We don't, because he's so thorough. He's a college professor, folks. That's what they do, is they write notes, all right? So a huge thank you to him. We can't wait to have him back on the show. And also a big thank you to our sponsors, Jayco,
Thetford, Campgrounds of America, Go RVing, and Cabela's.
All right, we will see you at the campground.
See you at the campground.